She just wants you to respect her. What are you talking about? I've idolized her since we were children.
That's not the same thing, Whit said, shaking his head, dismayed that I still didn't get it.
Francie, she wants your approval. She wants to know that you think she's okay, that you think she can do this, raise this baby, and be a good mother.
But that's crazy, Whit, and you know it. Don't put that on me.
I was furious all of a sudden. You didn't think she could do it.
That's why you left. She can't do it. Everything will fall apart. It's already started to fall apart.
I was shouting, my words reverberating off the walls of the garage. A woman hurried to her car, glancing in our direction.
If you tell her that, then it will be true, Whit said in a quiet voice.
What can I do? I finally asked him. I don't see how she can do this alone.
I met his eyes. Are you going to be there? Are you going to help her?
He looked away.
She's not my baby, Francie.
That's not the point!
I nearly shrieked at him. It was suddenly so clear to me, the difference in our roles. Whit was with Lottie by choice, while I was bound to her by something thicker than blood. Whit could walk away. Try as I might, I would never be able to do that to my sister. I looked down at Mia. She had Lottie's dark curls, her long lashes and pale skin. There was nothing of Whit in this child, but she looked just like me. I unlocked the car and lifted Mia out of the carrier and into the car seat. Somewhere between Lottie's room and the parking garage, she'd fallen asleep, not even stirring during our argument. I closed the car door gently and then turned back to Whit.
You know she wants to get back together with you. You can see that, can't you?
I waited, but he didn't answer.
You need to tell her it's not going to work out the way she wants. There is no happily ever after with this story.
As soon as I'd uttered such a callous and yet undeniably true sentence, I was close to tears. I got into the driver's seat and started up the car, rolling the window down to look at him again. He stood by the car, his hands hanging uselessly by his sides. He looked as broken and tired as I felt.
You need to tell her, I said again through the open window.
He didn't answer.
Lottie. When I awake, the idea is there. If I fail, Francie will succeed. Suicide attempt. Such a deliberate phrase. But does it cover not wearing your seatbelt while on the freeway? Does it cover walking home alone at night through a bad neighborhood? Does it cover closing your eyes for just a moment while you're driving, just to see what it feels like to have the thick black night hurtling toward you? Does it cover this superstitious brand of risk, as if fate and I are playing a game together, and fate will decide how hard I fall? Does it cover not going back for my helmet? Francie wants me to be able to answer yes or no. She wants the lines drawn clearly. How do I explain that the answer is not so simple? That I didn't try to get hit by the car, but that I wasn't paying attention. Instead, I was looking at the people getting on the bus. I was struck by the faces of the people standing in the back, holding onto the metal bar inside the bus for support, staring blankly out the windows. I only saw them for a second, but I held on to the image, and I was so saddened by the nothingness that I saw, the hopelessness and emptiness that had been breeding for years. When I finally dragged my eyes away from the gray gloom inside the bus, the car was already pulling out in front of me. And then it was upon me, and I didn't even have a moment to wonder if I should have worn the helmet. I didn't have a moment to think about what could be lost.
Francie. Careful, I said to Lottie, opening her car door.
I'm being careful.
She gingerly twisted her body so that her feet were on the sidewalk. The giant plastic boot looked like a costume out of a science fiction film, but it meant that Lottie would be able to walk while the fracture healed. Her arm would be in a cast for up to 10 weeks.
Lottie's neighbor, Sally, had offered to watch Mia for a few hours while I picked up Lottie from the hospital. It had taken much of the afternoon for the paperwork to be completed, and it was nearly 4 o'clock by the time we arrived back at the apartment.
Lottie began the slow and awkward journey up the front steps. Her boot clicked against the asphalt, and she winced with each step. I tried to hold her good arm, but she jerked my hand away. At the top of the steps, she paused, panting slightly.
How are you going to do this with Mia, too? I asked.
Just open the door, Francie, Lottie demanded, leaning on the railing. I unlocked it and held it open for her.
I'm just saying, you can barely make it up here by yourself. What would you do if you had Mia with you right now?
Lottie hobbled into the living room without answering.
And what about driving? Can you even drive with that thing on your foot and one arm? Is it even legal to drive with it?
Jesus, Francie, I don't know.
Well, whether it's legal or not, it can't be safe. You can't drive with Mia. And it will be another few weeks at least before you get the boot off.
I heard the shrillness in my voice, yet I couldn't stop. All of the anxiety that I'd kept to myself while Lottie was in the hospital poured out now.
How are you going to get around? How are you going to get to work? How are you going to get Mia to daycare?
I was planning on riding my bike, Lottie said sarcastically. She looked tired, but managed a grin as she collapsed on the couch.
I don't know. I really don't know how I'm going to do any of it. It's not your problem, though.
You should think about getting back to Boston.
Oh, shut up, I said, rolling my eyes. It's not as if I'm going to leave you here totally helpless.
I'll talk to Sally. Maybe she can help out with some extra babysitting and driving and that sort of thing.
Mark and I could pay her.
I can pay her, Francie. I have money. I do have a job, you know.
She began to thumb through the mail on the coffee table.
Fine.
And Whit might be able to help out a little, she said, without looking up from the stack of mail.
They're finishing up a job this week, so his schedule should be more flexible.
I didn't answer.
Can you get me the phone so I can call Sally to tell her to bring Mia over? Lottie asked.
She stretched herself out onto the couch and flipped on the television.
Do you think you can make me a cup of tea? And some toast?
I'm starving.
They didn't even give me lunch today.
I stood where I was for a moment, watching her. The swelling in her face had gone down, and she'd arranged her hair to cover the stitches above her ear.
Please?
She smiled sweetly, the same grin she always gave when she was trying to gain a favor. In the kitchen, I put on the kettle and made toast. As I fixed Lottie's snack, Sally came into the apartment with Mia. When I returned to the living room with a plate and mug of tea for Lottie, Sally was sitting on the couch. Mia fussed as Lottie tried to hold her with one arm.
Hi, Sally. Do you want a cup of tea? I asked.
Oh, no thanks. I've got to get to class soon.
She turned to Lottie.
My God, so scary. You're lucky to be alive.
I know. Mia whimpered and struggled to get comfortable. Sally adjusted her on Lottie's lap.
Seriously, Sally continued, this could have been so much worse. You really need to be careful when you ride your bike. Weren't you wearing your helmet?
I forgot it, Lottie said, taking a bite of toast.
Toast crumbs fell in Mia's hair.
Mmm, real butter. You should have tasted the nasty processed crap they fed me at the hospital.
Sally met my eyes, likely distraught by Lottie's cavalier attitude toward her brush with death. She wasn't really cavalier, I knew, but she wouldn't show anyone how much she'd scared herself.
So, how much longer will you be here, Francie?
Sally asked when it became clear that Lottie was done talking about the accident.
I don't know. Another week, at least. I want to make sure that Lottie gets settled. Sally nodded, her ponytail swinging against her shoulder. I was hoping we could talk about you helping out a bit for the next few weeks, or months. With driving and babysitting, that sort of thing. We'd pay you, of course, I said, careful not to look at Lottie.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to help. Anything I can do, she said quickly.
Great. We can talk more about the details later. We were quiet for a moment, some new awkwardness having descended over the room.
We should go out for a drink, Sally said suddenly, to celebrate Charlotte being home and being okay.
Now? I asked. Lottie and I locked eyes and a silent laugh traveled between us. Going to a bar with the baby and Lottie in casts was preposterous. The age difference between us and Sally was glaringly apparent.
Well, no. I have to go to class now, but maybe we could go out later?
Probably not today, I said. I don't think Charlotte's supposed to drink on all of the pain medication she's on. Just getting in and out of the house is difficult, and Mia will need to go to bed soon. Mia squirmed in Lottie's lap, rooting against her shirt with puckered lips.
Oh, right. Sorry, Sally said.
She looked disappointed. I realized that Sally was another Lottie fan. My sister had collected admirers her whole life, like other people collected stamps or knickknacks.
You could go, Francie, Lottie said.
I don't think so. I have to be here to help you, I said, wanting to let Sally off the hook. She wanted Lottie, not me.
Whit's coming over to help, Lottie said.
He is? I felt a flutter in my stomach that I didn't want to identify.
You didn't tell me that.
Lottie shrugged.
We talked this morning before I left the hospital. He said he'd come over tonight.
Did he say he was coming over to help with Mia?
Well, no, not explicitly. But what else does he think he's coming over for? You should go, Francie.
Lottie brought Mia's fist to her mouth and kissed it.
Are you hungry, baby? She asked Mia.
So, what do you think? Sally asked without enthusiasm. Drinks around 8?
I don't think so, I said. I'm pretty tired. It's been a long couple of days.
Oh, go on, Francie, Lottie said. Whit and I don't need a chaperone. We'll be fine.
Sally looked at me expectantly. I knew the only reason Lottie wanted me to go was so she could be alone with Whit. Much as I didn't want to go to a bar with a near stranger, I had no interest in staying home with Whit and Lottie.
Okay, I guess so.
Great.
Sally stood up from the couch. I'll come by around 8. See you then. After the door slammed behind her, I turned to Lottie.
What on earth are we going to talk about?
We both looked down at Mia, who'd snatched the rattle from Lottie's hands and was shaking it in jerky motions.
She's nice. Young, but nice. Lottie shrugged. You'll spend the whole time talking about me.
I looked away guiltily because she was probably right.
God, I can't even remember the last time I went out for a drink, I said.
Actually, that's not true. It was in October. The weekend of Mark's high school reunion.
You need to get out more, Francie, Lottie said.
I know, I sighed. So Whit's coming over tonight?
Yep.
Lottie looked at me, waiting for me to go on. I faked a yawn.
I'm going to go lie down for a little while. Will you two be okay here if I bring you a bottle?
Sure, Lottie said.
I prepared a bottle and brought it to them. I felt Lottie's eyes on me, waiting for me to tell her about Whit, to identify the cord of tension that jangled between us. I kept my eyes on Mia, the bottle, the brightly colored rattle that she clutched in her chubby fist. I focused on anything other than my sister's eyes, which had always been able to root out the truth.
Lottie.
I stared down at Mia where she slept beside me on the couch. Her lips were parted slightly, the milk-scented breath seeping from her tiny mouth. Watching her sleep filled me with so many emotions. A black anger at myself. A jagged red streak of love. The gleaming silver of guilt. The pink hope of possibility. All tinged by the yellow pallor of fear. "Maybe we'll be okay," I whispered to her. If I moved too quickly, I was jarred by the pain in my arm or the heaviness of my head, a sharp-toothed reminder of just a few days earlier. But if I stayed very still, I could still see the pink edges, and it was this that I held on to. "Maybe Whit will stay with us." I'd seen Francie's face when I told her Whit was coming over. It was pity and judgment all rolled into one. The same expression my sister wore during 90% of her interactions with me. "Give it up," the expression said. "Let it go, Lottie." But how do I let go when he might be our only chance? How do you let go when you thought you were alone in the middle of the ocean and someone throws you a life preserver? Even if you jumped overboard yourself, even if you were trying to drown, how do you not breathe in the sweet taste of oxygen if you accidentally break the surface? Francie. I was standing by my open suitcase, looking down at the browns and grays of my wardrobe, when Lottie shuffled into the bedroom. She peered into my bag. "Are you trying to find something for tonight?" "I'll probably just wear what I have on." I was wearing jeans and a zip-up black sweater that was rumpled from napping. "Let me dress you," Lottie said, a slow grin coming over her face. I thought back to the night Whit came over and the white sundress of Lottie's that I'd worn. I shook my head quickly. "No, that's okay. Come on. I promise I won't pick anything outrageous. I'll make you look like the best version of yourself." "Like you?" I asked, smiling in spite of myself. "Exactly," Lottie laughed. "Come on, sit down. I'll find something perfect for you. It's a swanky bar. You'll want to look nice." I let Lottie lead me to the bed before she hobbled over to her closet. 15 minutes later, I was wearing a simple black sheath dress with a red silk scarf draped around my neck. Lottie picked out a pair of chunky black heels that made my feet ache within a few minutes, but I kept them on anyway. I let her do my makeup, and she spent extra time lining my eyelids and putting on a mouthful of bright red lipstick. When she was finished, she brought me over to the full-length mirror in her room. "See? You look beautiful." We both stared at my reflection. In the outfit that Lottie had chosen for me, I looked confident and sure of myself. Lottie, in her flannel pajama pants and wraparound sweater, looked more like me. "You should dress like this more often." "Where? To play dates and school drop-off?" "Sure, why not?" Lottie sat down on the bed. Even as I laughed at the idea, I realized that there were other mothers who dressed up every day, even mothers like me who didn't have jobs to go to after the bell rang. I'd always silently mocked these women, as if not spending any time on my appearance made me superior to them. "There's nothing wrong with standing out," Lottie continued. "It's okay to dress in a way that makes people notice you." "I'm just not comfortable like this."
"But why not?"
"I don't know. I feel like I'm trying too hard."
"But what's wrong with trying?"
Lottie asked. She met my eyes in the mirror and looked truly puzzled. Trying meant that it might not work. Someone could whisper behind my back. Someone else might stare. Another could laugh. No one stared and laughed when you wore jeans and sneakers and sweaters every day. Besides, for as long as I could remember, Lottie had been the one who stood out, and I'd been the one who faded into the background. I couldn't imagine being any other way. I sat on the bed beside Lottie, out of earshot of the mirror. "How are you feeling?" I asked, instead of answering her question.
"Okay. My arm aches, but I just took some of the pain medication they gave me."
"Will you be okay with Mia tonight?"
"She's already down for the night."
I'll be fine. Her voice was firm.
When's Whit coming over?
Soon. He called to say he was on his way. She rubbed the plaster of her cast absently.
I kind of hoped Mia would still be awake so he could spend some time with her, she admitted.
Lottie. My voice held an unspoken warning.
What?
She caught my eye.
We have a history, Francie.
I know you do. I just don't want you to get your hopes up. I paused, trying to choose my next words carefully.
He didn't want a baby with you, Lottie.
Nothing's changed, I said gently.
She turned away from me and pushed herself off the bed. A lot has changed. I almost died. Mia is here. He met her. That's different from just talking about some theoretical baby.
I don't think it is for Whit.
I stood up from the bed as well, and in the heels I was nearly 2 inches taller than Lottie. And what do you know about it, Francie? What do you know about Whit? She asked, and there was a strange expression on her face.
Nothing.
I looked down at my feet in Lottie's shoes.
Are you sure?
Her eyes were narrowed, and a malicious smile played at her lips.
She knew.
Whether Whit had told her, or she'd discerned what had happened, she knew about the other night.
It seems like you really understand him. You guys must have gotten awful close over the years. All that time, trying to keep me from going crazy.
Her words were daggers, laced with sarcasm and accusation.
I don't. We're not, I insisted.
Lottie was silent for a moment as she held my gaze, and I wondered if she was going to ask me directly about what had happened. But when she spoke again, her tone had softened slightly.
In that case, don't pretend to know what he wants or doesn't want. It wasn't so long ago that he wanted me.
From the hallway, we heard the sound of the doorbell ringing.
My date or yours? Lottie asked, and her voice had gone light again.
She began to make her way to the front door, but then turned around.
Francie?
Yeah?
Now we're even.
Her face was expressionless.
What?
What do you mean?
Even now, I was still feigning innocence.
An eye for an eye, she said, and raised her eyebrows at me. It was what our mother used to say when we'd argue as kids, except Lottie had left off the rest of the expression. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Mother would say as she smoothed back our hair and gathered us in her lap.
Were we even now?
An almost night with your lover for the almost life of my child? The exchange didn't seem equal. But I remembered Whit's fingers on my hips, across my belly, his mouth on mine, and my skin crawled with shame. I nodded at Lottie without answering, and she stared at me for a moment longer before leaving the room. I stayed immobile on the bed. My heart was beating so fast, and I brought both of my hands up to my chest as if I could quell the angry drumbeat. Out in the hallway, Lottie and Sally were talking, and I finally stood up and smoothed the skirt, staring back at my reflection. If I didn't know better, I would have sworn I was looking at my sister. Francie. When I'd finally left Lottie's bedroom, I enjoyed the click of the high heels against the wooden floor. Just the sound alone was enough to make me feel sexy. But it only lasted a moment. Sally stood in the hall in jeans and a black turtleneck sweater.
Wow, Sally said. You look great.
She stared at me, taking in the outfit and the makeup, and I found myself unconsciously fingering my lips in an effort to wipe away some of the red lipstick.
I dressed her up, Lottie said, flashing an insincere smile. As if I were a doll or a child in a Halloween costume. And I wondered if I'd been the butt of her joke all along. A few minutes later, Sally and I slid into a plush red booth at a nearby bar. The waitresses carried trays piled high with delicate glasses in all sizes and colors. I reviewed the drink list that was filled with cocktails I'd never heard of, and settled on something called a black cherry fizz, only because I could identify all of the ingredients. The waitress brought my drink in an oversized martini glass and Sally's mojito. It was sweet and tart and would be easy to drink too many. Now that we were here, I didn't know what to say. I felt awkward and old around Sally, but she seemed unfazed. "Have you lived next door to Charlotte for a long time?" I asked. "Just a year, but I knew her from school before that. I took a class with her my freshman year."
"Oh, really? Did you like it?"
"Well, it was a requirement." She shrugged sheepishly. "I'm not really much of an English student. I'm a nutrition major. But Charlotte is an amazing professor and her classes always fill up fast. She gives a creative writing assignment for the final, which is kind of unorthodox." I sipped at my drink, enjoying the sugary burst of sweetness. "What else is she like?"
"Charlotte? She's your sister. I'm sure you know her a lot better than I do."
Sally shifted uncomfortably in her chair and looked around. She waved to someone across the room, a handsome guy at the bar. He tilted his head slightly to Sally, inviting her over. She shook her head, just a tiny shake indicating no. "I'm too close to her. I'm not objective," I said.
"I don't know. She's great."
Sally chewed on her straw, stalling. "I just need to know what she's been like since Mia came along." Until I started talking, I hadn't realized I was going to bring this up with Sally, but now that I'd begun, I realized it was why I agreed to a drink in the first place. "I know you care about Charlotte, and I don't want to talk about her behind her back." "I understand that. I just need to make sure Mia's safe with her."
"Safe?"
Sally looked sharply at me.
"What do you mean?"
I looked down into my drink and stabbed one of the black cherries with a straw. I hated this part. It wasn't right to share Lottie's business, but I didn't see how I could avoid it. "She has bipolar disorder." Sally frowned, and I continued. "She suffers from extreme depression and mania when she's not taking medication."
"Oh, I didn't know."
She leaned back in her chair, absorbing the information. I nodded. "She doesn't tell many people. I don't know what she's been like since Mia came along. I was just hoping you could fill me in a little."
Sally shrugged. "She's intense and fun and moody, but that's who Charlotte is. I never realized she was unwell."
"She's not, most of the time." I leaned forward in the seat. The backs of my legs stuck to the leather cushion of the booth, and I slipped my feet from the tight heels.
"What do you mean, moody?"
"She can be hot and cold. Some days I'll see her and she's friendly and warm, asking about school, talking about Mia. She'll be really interested. And then other times I see her and it's like we hardly know each other." Sally shrugged. "I don't take it personally. I just figured she's kind of moody." The word was so weak and lukewarm for Lottie. "What about with Mia? Does she seem like a good mother?" Sally stirred her drink with a straw. She took a long time to answer. I could almost see her realizing that this drink with the neighbor's sister had been a bad idea. She looked longingly at the boy at the bar, most likely wishing desperately that he and I would switch places.
"I don't know. I guess. I've always thought so.
Please, I need to know.
Why?
She directed the question at the bottom of the drink, not at me.
Because I need to know if my sister can take care of Mia. I need to know if I can leave Mia here with her.
She's Charlotte's daughter. You can't just take her away, Sally said, and she suddenly seemed angry.
I don't want to take her away, but I need to know if Lottie can take care of her.
Can she? I asked.
Sally sighed and looked up from her drink.
It's not easy. Anyone could tell that. I've seen her stressed out and tired.
But why wouldn't she be? She's a single mom, trying the best she can.
She'd begun to tear a cocktail napkin to pieces, white flecks of paper gathering on the table.
Is she neglectful? I ask, pressing.
Neglectful?
Sally's eyebrows rose as she repeated the word.
No, she said firmly.
I mean, a few times I babysat and there wasn't a ton of food in the fridge, but Mia's only drinking milk anyway. And Charlotte always makes sure there's plenty of breast milk or formula for when I watch Mia.
Lately, she gestured vaguely with her hand.
I mean, you saw, the place had become a mess, but that was just in the past week or so. It doesn't usually look like that. She shrugged.
Charlotte's used to living alone. I think she's still figuring out how to adapt to having a kid in her life.
She looked up from the table and locked eyes with me.
She loves Mia, more than anything.
Neglectful?
No.
Sally swept the shreds of paper into her palm and rolled them up in another napkin. She turned her body slightly away from me as she did this, just enough to signal that she didn't want to talk about it anymore.
So earlier I mentioned helping out with Lottie over the next few weeks, while she's getting over her injuries. Are you up for that? Maybe in the mornings you could come over and help her and Mia get ready?
We can work out the payment, I said.
Of course.
Sally looked grateful that the conversation appeared to be almost over. But I wasn't finished.
And then later, once Lottie's injuries are healed, do you think you could check in with me every week or so just to let me know how she's doing? And that Mia is all right?
I hated to ask her. She looked like a child being asked to tattle on a parent.
It doesn't have to be a big deal. Just a quick phone call or an email or text, even, I said.
I don't know. That feels kind of weird. Going behind Charlotte's back like that?
There was a pained expression on her face.
It doesn't have to be behind her back. I'll tell her.
Lottie would hate it and would argue, but in the end, she'd have no choice.
Well, as long as Charlotte knows,
she chewed on her lower lip, considering the arrangement.
I guess that would be okay.
Great. Thank you. It means a lot to me.
The boy at the bar was looking at Sally again. He was nearly done with his drink. I finished mine in one quick swallow and stood up from the table.
I have to use the restroom. I'll be right back.
In the bathroom, I looked at my reflection in the mirror. I didn't look at all like Lottie. She had applied the makeup with a much heavier hand than she used on her own face. My eyes were too dark, and the bright lipstick looked garish. I bent over the sink and washed the makeup away. I looked at my clear reflection in the mirror as the black and red remains of the clownish face slid down the silver pipes. I was myself again. Sally's friend had joined her at the table. He was perched on the edge of the booth, close enough that his legs pressed against hers, and I noticed he'd brought over another mojito. When they saw me, Sally pulled back, turning to the young man.
I'm going back, I said before she could introduce us.
Relief and surprise rinsed Sally's face, but she quickly positioned her features into an expression of regret.
Oh, are you sure?
I nodded. I should make sure Charlotte's okay.
I stood up. The bar was hot and stuffy, and I was ready to leave.
"Are you okay with walking home on your own?" Sally asked half-heartedly.
"I'm fine. Fine," I mumbled. And then I was making my way through the crowded bar and pushing the heavy doors open, releasing myself into the cool evening air. Though it was nearly 9, College Avenue was still busy with street vendors and performers. A man stood on the corner in front of a burrito place singing opera. He was young, probably in his late teens or early 20s, yet his voice gave him the illusion of someone much older. I stopped for a moment to listen to the haunting words that the man sang in Italian. I wondered if he lived around here or if he slept on a nearby street, tucked into the alcove of a doorway. There were times when I missed living in the city. My own neighborhood bustled with baby strollers and dog walkers, not musicians. I didn't miss the panhandlers that lined the street, straggly-haired and desperate, holding cardboard signs that asked for help in black Sharpie letters. If I lived here, it would only be a matter of time before these people became invisible, blending into the scenery of restaurants and boutiques, as common to city life as traffic or pollution. Boston was no different, though at least here, the winters were mild and people didn't freeze to death overnight. They would wake again tomorrow to the same uncaring world as today. The musician's voice surged over the squeal of cars, and I recalled one of the first times Lottie and I walked this street during the month of our freshman year at Berkeley. It was before Lottie's first episode, before our roles were irrevocably reversed. We'd bought our textbooks and a bunch of paperback novels, reluctantly shelling out several $100. Our backpacks were full, and we each carried an additional sturdy plastic bag. Though I'd balked at the cost, I felt a secret thrill buying the books, secure in the belief that all of the knowledge they held would be imparted to me by winter break. As we walked back toward campus, we came upon a man in his mid-20s, though at the time he seemed old to us. Gently strumming a guitar and singing Bob Dylan's "The Times They Are a-Changin'," and I cynically recognized the man as a cliché of Berkeley. I kept walking, but Lottie stopped, resting her bag of books on the sidewalk beside her. She began to tap her foot lightly with a slow beat and sway side to side. I watched as the singer noticed Lottie in the small crowd of only 5 or 6 people that had gathered around him. The corners of his lips turned up in a smile, and his voice grew a little stronger and surer as he sang. And then Lottie began to sing along. She'd always had a good voice, and she was a confident singer after the many high school productions. Her voice was gentle but strong, and as she sang, she moved closer to the young man. We'd later find out that his name was Lloyd, and he had studied music at Berkeley for 2 years before dropping out. I'd learned through Lottie that Lloyd was 24 and worked as a busser in a 4-star restaurant. But for this moment, he was just a stranger singing on the street. Their voices balanced well, and though I knew little about music, even I could tell that they were good together. Pretty soon a slightly larger crowd had pooled around them, and they moved seamlessly into a Joni Mitchell song. It was a song I'd heard before, enough times to recognize it, but I was surprised that Lottie knew all of the words. As they sang, I became aware of the smooth angles in Lloyd's face. His full pouting mouth, his delicate long eyelashes and startling green eyes. I noticed the thick knuckles and veins in his hands and the defined muscles of his forearms. None of these things had I noticed until Lottie began to sing with him. My back ached with the books that I carried, and as the crowd started clapping and Lottie and Lloyd began to talk, I felt a sinking disappointment as I accurately predicted what the next few moments and then hours would hold. Lottie and Lloyd would go somewhere, for coffee or lunch or a drink, and I would walk back to the dorm room, likely carrying Lottie's bag of books as well as my own. I'd spend the rest of the evening reading my textbooks alone, and while this had held a thrill just minutes earlier, it would now be tinged with defeat. I'd stay in the room all night, only leaving to eat dinner in the dining hall. Back in our room, I'd study some more, trying to stay awake as long as possible, even though I knew that Lottie wouldn't be home for hours. Eventually, I'd fall asleep, waking in the middle of the night to turn off the reading lamp. Lottie would come into the room as the purple light of dawn was creeping through the plastic blinds, and her keys would jingle as she entered. She'd bump her knee on the corner of the extra-long bed, and she'd smell of cigarettes and beer and the musky aroma of sex. I would want to sleep through all of it, but I'd wake anyway, ask Lottie about her night, about Lloyd, and she would tell me everything. The evening lay before me in all its predictable emptiness. When Lottie came to ask if I minded going back to the dorm alone because Lloyd was going to show her the best falafel place in town, I didn't bat an eye, only offered to carry home my sister's books. I thought of this now as I watched the opera singer. Briefly, I wondered what had happened to Lloyd. I wondered if he still played music, if he still worked in a restaurant. I felt in the bottom of my purse and my fingers closed around several sticky coins. But somehow, remembering Lloyd and those lonely weeks that he hung around Lottie like an overpowering perfume, I thought better of it and released the coins back into the bottom of my bag. I walked back to Lottie's house without stopping again. Lottie. When Francie and Sally left, I went into Mia's room to watch her sleep. After she was born, it became one of the few things that could calm me when I felt my moods shifting. Today I was medicated, but too much so. Between the pain and the mood meds, I could barely connect with my feelings or thoughts. But I knew that without all of the drugs, my mind would be stormy, bubbling hotly on the surface. Even through the dull haze of numbness, I still felt anger at Francie and Whit for whatever happened between them. He hadn't said anything, and I'd never ask. But I could see the guilt written on Francie's face as clear as if she'd told me. There was no need to know the particulars, because who knew what dark and winding path the details would bring me. And if I was honest with myself, there was a certain relief that came with Francie's obvious guilt. At last, I was not the one guilty of hurting someone. At last, I wasn't the bad one. It was a dangerous card that I could keep tucked away in my back pocket to withdraw whenever I needed it. Now Francie knew that I had it. Whit's arrival back in my life filled me with hope. It was something I didn't want to admit, not to Francie, and not even to myself. Because I knew that sitting right next to the tiny package labeled hope was a much larger box labeled despair. To reach for the first, I had to be willing to reach past the other. When Whit unlocked my front door, I was lying on the couch with a bag of pretzels and a glass of water, unable to prepare a more suitable dinner for myself. He let himself in with his key, the one I'd given him 10 years earlier and never asked him to return. I sat up and wiped pretzel crumbs from my lips, wishing I'd be able to dress for him. But with only one working arm and leg, I was stuck in pajama pants. "How are you doing?" he asked, taking a seat in the chair opposite the couch. "You can sit here," I shifted, trying to make room. I wanted to feel the weight of his body against me. "It's okay," Whit said, shaking his head. "You're comfortable." "Nice boot." He leaned forward and rapped his knuckles lightly against the plastic of my foot. "How are you feeling?"
"I'm okay."
I suddenly felt shy around him. This man who had seen me naked more times than I could count, who'd seen me in my darkest and most vulnerable moments. Though he'd come to visit me in the hospital, this felt different. Without the bustle of the hospital around us, there was nothing to concentrate on but each other. It's good to see you.
You too.
How have you been?
Good.
He sat with his hands splayed over his knees, a large man with a large presence, unsure what to do with his body in this overly familiar room.
Busy, but good.
Me too. I smiled at him.
Yeah, I'll bet.
He looked around the room.
Where is she?
She's sleeping. Do you want to go see her? She's beautiful when she sleeps.
That's okay. I got to see her in the hospital.
As if once was all he needed. I reached for a pretzel to avoid his gaze. How's it going with her? What do you mean? When I looked up, there was a stiff and pained expression on his face. And I could see how hard this was for him. Being here, talking about Mia, acting as if this were all normal.
How's motherhood?
My eyes filled with tears at the question. It was a simple question with a complicated answer. For any woman, this would have been true. For me, it was true 100-fold. Great, I said simply.
Good.
I went back to focusing on the bowl of pretzels. The conversation was unbearable. It means mine, I told him.
What?
Mia's name. It means mine.
Oh.
He stood up from the chair and came to sit beside me on the couch. I shifted my good leg to the floor and rested the boot in his lap. I didn't want her to belong to anyone but me, I told him. Partly because I was angry with you, but also because when she was born, she was all I had.
And now?
Now? I don't know now. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. I'm afraid Francie will try to take her from me. We hadn't spoken about it since she arrived in California, but we both knew how carefully she was watching me, assessing what damage I was capable of.
Should she?
His voice was even and without judgment, as always. No. She's my daughter. She belongs with me. I take care of her. His hand rested on the plaster cast, and I longed to feel the warmth of his fingers against my skin. I reached for his other hand and squeezed it. He let me, but he didn't squeeze back. I've missed you.
I've missed you, too.
I ignored the note of sadness in his voice, the echo that said it was too late. Are you seeing anyone? He shook his head. That's good. No, Charlotte, it's not, he said loudly. It's not good at all. I was silent, his hand limp in mine. Are you sure you don't want to see Mia? I blinked back tears, hating the pleading tone in my voice. He pulled his hand away, bringing it up to cover his eyes. I can't do this, Charlotte. Why not? I asked. It's not too late, Whit. I know you still love me. He took his hand from his eyes and turned to look at me.
You're right, I do.
He looked tired, his eyes bloodshot, several days worth of stubble on his face. We can do this together. She's only 5 months. We'll change her name. We'll use a baby name dictionary and find one that means ours, I joked desperately. Charlotte, don't you get it? Don't you get it? He was nearly yelling, and I looked anxiously toward the hallway leading to Mia's room where she slept soundly. I can't do this with you. I can't watch you hurt that child. I can't watch the damage you will inflict upon her. I was crying silently, the tears making their way down my cheeks. I won't, I promised. This is different. I'll do whatever I have to.
I'll do whatever you want. I reached for his hand, but he pulled away.
I wanted you, Charlotte. Just you. Even with all of the complications that that meant. But I can't do this with you.
Witt's eyes were bright with tears.
You make promises that you can't keep. It will happen, Charlotte. Don't you get it? It will happen.
He shook his head in sadness or resignation or years worth of disgust.
You'll hurt her over and over, and I'll come to despise you for it.
He paused for a breath.
I think Francie might be right.
Something sharp snapped inside of me.
Get out, I ordered, struggling to sit up. Get out of my house. You have no right, I shrieked at him. Do you hear me? You have no right.
Tears ran down my face, but my heart was blazing with anger.
You stay away from my daughter, Witt, and you stay away from my sister. Do you hear me? Get out of my house.
Witt was already standing, shaking his head sadly at where I was huddled on the couch.
I'm sorry, Charlotte. I wish it didn't have to be this way. Get out! I yelled and reached for the glass of water on the table.
I hurled it at him where he stood in the doorway. I missed him by over a foot, and he stood for another minute, looking at the shards of glass and water all over the hallway floor. I knew he was thinking about going into the kitchen closet and getting a broom to clean the mess up, and I hated him for it.
Stop taking care of me! I screamed.
He stood for one more minute before letting himself out the front door. Down the hall, Mia began to wail, but her cries were not as loud as my own. When Francie arrived home, I was already in bed, depleted and wrung out from Witt's visit and getting Mia back to sleep. Francie tiptoed into the room, crawling in beside me. In the dark, I murmured a greeting, enough to signal that I was still awake.
Did you have a nice time with Witt? She asked.
It was fine, I said after a moment.
Did you have fun with Sally?
It was okay.
Outside, I could hear cars passing by. The honk of a horn, a car alarm going off, the sounds of the city at night.
I was thinking we could go visit Dad tomorrow, Francie said. Have you been to see him recently?
Every Thursday.
Does he recognize you when you visit?
I shifted in bed beside her, unable to find a position that was comfortable with the cast on my arm.
Sort of. I mean, he recognizes me, but usually he doesn't know if I'm me or you or Mother.
When I take Mia with me, he thinks she's one of us. He keeps asking where her sister is.
It's good of you to visit him every week. I'm sure it's not easy.
How could I not? He's the only family we have. Down the hall, Mia let out a little cry, and we both went still, waiting to see if she would wake fully. There were no more sounds, and I felt Francie relax beside me.
When are you going back to work? I asked.
It was partly to change the subject, but I wanted to talk to Francie about this for a long time.
What do you mean?
I mean, the girls are, what, almost six now? Are you ever going to go back to work?
I don't know. Her voice was small in the darkness.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
She laughed, but her words were tinged with sadness. I thought you liked teaching.
I did. And then I didn't.
Her voice was suddenly thick with tears. What happened? Beside me, Francie shook her head on the pillow.
Francie, what happened?
There was a girl, she said finally.
I waited for her to go on.
Her name was Caitlin. She killed herself.
I'm sorry, Francie.
That's awful.
I should have been able to stop her, Francie continued. She wrote something in my class. It showed she was depressed, that she was thinking about suicide. I didn't read it until it was too late.
I could tell she was crying quietly, and I reached out a hand to wipe the tears from her cheeks. Francie pressed closer to me.
I could have stopped her.
Francie, you don't know that. It wasn't your fault.
I should have reached out to her. I had a chance, and I didn't.
You don't know that would have changed anything, I said.
But it might have, she whispered. I just don't see how I could go back into the classroom after that.
We were quiet again. We both lay on our backs and stared at the shadows on the ceiling as we spoke. Outside, Sally's porch light went on, the motion sensors indicating her arrival. Her keys jingled against the door, and I heard hushed voices before the door closed. So don't be a teacher, I said after a few minutes. There are lots of things you could do.
Like what?
I could tell that she really didn't know. My baby sister, still so unsure of herself at the bottom of it all. You could go back to your art. You were really good.
I loved taking art classes in college, but it was the idea of being an artist that I liked more than anything.
There are lots of jobs you can do with art skills, though, I persisted.
Like what?
Graphic design or web design or portraits? You were so good at those. I bet lots of parents would pay to have portraits done of their kids. She murmured noncommittally. Maybe. Down the hall, Mia let out another wail, and this time she kept going.
I'll get her, Francie said, rising from the bed.
I heard her in the kitchen making a bottle, and then in Mia's room, cooing softly as she lowered the side of the crib. A minute later, they were both back in my bed, Mia cradled in Francie's arms, sucking away on a bottle. Francie placed her between us, and I leaned down to kiss Mia's smooth cheek and inhale the smell of her skin.
Are you going to take her away from me? I asked. Should I? She asked, without answering. Francie, I love her. I know you do. I wanted her so much, I whispered. I sacrificed everything for her. Do you regret it?
No.
But I'm scared of how I'm gonna fuck it up.
I held Mia's tiny hand in mine.
Because we both know I will.
We lay in the darkness and listened to the rhythmic sounds of Mia's sucking. When she was finished, Francie rose from the bed and carried my sleeping girl back to her crib. In the morning, we drove down to Palo Alto to see our father. He'd been in the nursing home for nearly 3 years. After he'd been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, Francie and I argued over whether he could continue to live on his own. I'd been stopping by his place every night, each time terrified by what I might find. I took his car keys away from him, though this was more frustrating for him than demeaning. He'd often spend minutes, maybe even hours, trying to find them, assuming he'd just misplaced them somewhere. I'd find jobs half done, clothes and detergent in the open washing machine, eggs and orange juice still on the counter at 6 o'clock at night, the shower still running. One evening, I arrived to find the burner on the kitchen stove lit. It was hard to tell how long it had been on, but the kitchen held the tangy scent of gas. I visited him each week, and he told me stories, reminding me of events I only half recalled. I was always amazed at how carefully these memories were preserved, as if they'd been canned and pickled, left in clear glass jars in the basement of his brain. I knew he was deteriorating, but it wasn't until 3 years ago, on the night I couldn't find him, that we decided to put him in a home. On that particular Thursday, the front door was ajar and no one was home. I wandered through the condo calling for him, but it was empty.